Let the old order swallow the losses. I personally find the latter to be the just outcome. I find that all in the declaration and determination of the National Grand Jury to be intellectually valid, but with no way to have enforcement, and that the Supreme Court members, being the same as the members of the Petit Jury acting in grand jury mode, will be held without merit, and the order issued and cleared by the Petit Jurors acting as Supreme Court justices will not carry the day. If you did have $1 zillion backing you, and as many as even 1 million people in full marching support, you would have a chance. However, there are no funds yet, and the same names show up over and over again, which to me indicates a far less number of followers than the 33 million touted. So let us consider the order. Quote, be it ordered that the 9 justices of the Supreme Court for the United States of America are hereby mandated to issue an order to the purported, quote, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief, William Jefferson Clinton, in the form of a common law writ of estoppel, to, and Hatton says, now pay attention, to preclude him from signing any executive orders or PDDs that would put this nation under a declared emergency, martial law, or any other form of military-like control. Any such act on the part of the purported president could only be construed as an act of war against the people of this nation, created only in order to avoid prosecution of the crimes and findings enumerated herein, and constitutes treason. Hatton's comment said, sounds good. However, you have been under martial law and the War Powers Act, which supersedes the declared emergency, and you always have somewhere a declared emergency. Bosnia is your international declared emergency extension. Could this develop a coup which could overturn the system? Yes, but my doubts are that it will, in this condition of self-appointed everythings, because we come to the next paragraph of the order, which declares, be it further ordered that the 9 justices of the Supreme Court are mandated to order the Joint Chiefs of Staff, upon the violation of said common law writ of estoppel,
well, while it's off, let us all giggle.
Off the record giggles.
Off the record giggles.
There's a giggle on
there. This is tape number 2, December the 3rd, 1995. And I guess I better back up a little bit. Any such act on the part of the purported president could only be construed as an act of war against the people of this nation, created only in order to avoid prosecution of the crimes and findings enumerated herein, and constitutes treason. Hatton's comment was, sounds good. However, you have been under martial law and the War Powers Act, which supersedes the declared emergency, and you always have somewhere a declared emergency. Bosnia is your international declared emergency extension. Could this develop into a coup which could overthrow the system? Yes, but my doubts are that it will, in this condition of self-appointed everythings, because we come to the next paragraph of the order, which declares, be it further ordered that the 9 justices of the Supreme Court are mandated to order the Joint Chiefs of Staff, upon the violation of said common law writ of estoppel, or in absence of or prior to issuance of said writ, to stand down and ignore any such directive by the purported President of the United States, and arrest and detain him on the charge of treason against the people of this nation. Who are the Joint Chiefs of Staff? The violations antedate any formation of a new Joint Chiefs of Staff serving in an emergency capacity under your Constitution, now. Now consider the problem here as you move through the expectation of making changes through a common law, which also came from England, just as did the admiralty or maritime law, by what means can you reestablish? Through what conduit can you have revolution? Affixing names to a paper is of no consequence, readers, although the only way to recover integrity in your system is through the building of a republic under separate cover of law. Another problem I see with the legality of this document is that all parties serving are on every slate of managers. This becomes a typical document of self-appointed dictators, and at best is represented by only some 17 states of the accepted states united of America. I want you all to remember a most important fact of life. Saying a thing does not make it so. Being in truth is the only thing that can make a statement so. So, I am asked my opinion of this purpose as outlaid. I have only given you silly observations because I want you to think seriously about what you do and what you perceive. What else is available to you for action within the law? How much real power do you have behind this Declaration of Independence? What are you actually asking for or demanding? Is it not that the actions thus far manipulated are within the original Constitution? I cannot tell you what to do. There are a large number of congressional misfits bailing out of re-election mode, and there has to be a reason, for these are inbred leeches of the blood of the people. Something is taking place, and it is called the handwriting on the wall. And you already are in a national emergency, international emergency, economic emergency, and state of disorder. Clinton has simply continued that which his predecessors set into motion before the turn of the century and intend to finish in total control by the end of it. Please don't write for copies of this large document to contact or us, for we cannot afford to supply them. This is not to construe displeasure, only that contact is unable to meet the expenses. The document is available, I would presume, from Jackson's New Republic. It is a well-thought-out document, as have been other attempts at reconstruction and change. We most certainly would be pleased to keep a running update on this action, for we represent freedom in press. Our thrust recently has been toward information and help in the plague side of the Getcha coin, while we have to leave a lot of the political and constitutional display to others. There is no point in having political nations if there are no people in or on them. I would, however, like to suggest you obtain a reprint from Grandma, which is labeled Think About It. Why? Because it is worthy of your serious thoughts about it. It is from Voice of the Old Guard, Tuesday, 21 November, 1995, by Grandma Herman, and can be obtained from Ron Jackson's New Republic, as well as the above-discussed documents, I believe. I don't seem to get copies of the paper by the same name, although fax documents are forwarded to this desk. I do think, like most of us old, battered, and broken old folks, she doesn't have funding for secretaries and mailing, so let us take care not to ask too much. I am asked not to run the material because of lack of space and duplication with the New Republic format of information distribution. I would like to add that one thing was offered for validity of the personage of Ron Jackson did come from Grandma, who says she knew and worked with or around Ron Jackson when they served in presidential circles of Secret Security Service. We based a lot of confidence on that very recognition, for we, like you, must play the game with what we draw as a hand. You must understand something, readers. When I am cast out of the loop for service and consideration, I get out of the loop. We have no knowledge or part in any claims, certificates, etc., as presented by Grandma or Jackson. We sincerely hope all tactics bear fruit because they do have an agreement and offered us sharing in rewards if we met certain agreements. We met our commitments and still pray diligently that their plans bear fruit and offer some help in building projects for needed materials for the long, hard days ahead. I am often in regret and despair to realize that their mailing list is our reader mailing list. For the touted list of some 33 million people would, obviously, far outweigh our some 1,300 subscribers. All these people, some handful, have invested funds against credit, which at present appears to be lost. I remind you who write to me almost daily that I can't do anything about that state of affairs. If indeed Mr. Jackson produces his committee and, with their involvement, makes this idea work, I would think the investment would bring dividends. However, I find that no member thus listed on his committee of 16 would you want as a leader of your new nation. Most certainly not as a permanent ruler. Remember that Mr. Jackson himself told you that the leadership would simply be replaced, at least initially, by equally as forceful, through force, personages as now manipulate your lives. Remember to check your miracles. Replacement of a dictator for another dictator is not a miracle. A miracle is what happened in Washington, D.C. in the Million Man March, which had peace instead of the intended civil war. That was a show of God's adjudication and responsive intercession. Further, God has adequate facilities to see to his people if they petition in righteousness and not just more New World Order under dictatorship. If these ones claim to be only in service unto God Creator in this march to New Order, they misspeak. That endeavor is blessed with much deception and ego-based intent. To claim God as author, which they certainly do not, would be false in both statement and intent. I have never witnessed godly response coming from human coercion or force. God sends his messengers, and by actions shall ye know a man. So I stand down and petition that you take valiant care with your own decisions and actions. I simply ask how you plan to pull off this coup with your military in foreign lands and only Russian-ruled UN troops to guard your citizens. God intervenes for goodness, not for one army against that of another. Think about this very, very carefully, for just because you think a thing to be right, because you think it, does not make it right. And likewise, remember something about this new Bosnian farce? The Serbs already have announced they will not honor the peace agreement. Where does this leave your peacekeeping troops? How can you enforce a peace that is a war? Do you not see that you have to have this movement to ensure a continuation of national emergency? Bosnia is the very foundation of this standing emergency status. The congressional rats are bailing out of the boat because they have led your nation to this disaster, and you are now going to find out about it. Also, they know it is only moments before the collapse of the economy, currency, and government. Please, 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 if you can help us get some spelta planted, some preparations furthered, and help us with the things of the life-sustaining backup, we thank you. Politics are going to simply be a collapsing thing of puppet masters with their hands full. A remnant must come through, or there is no hope for a return to respect and freedom. You keep dividing into fragments, supporting one or another cause as the tails shift. I cannot stop you from doing so, but you leave your one avenue of positive progress naked and denied. So be it. You are at childhood's end. This does not mean that the basis of the story, childhood's end, is valid nor factual, although you do have harbingers and overlords of truth and structure, and certainly comes along the overmind. The play will run its course, and the actors go back to their lives waiting for armies to die, but will your planet, stage, survive? Will you survive? This is a serious consideration, as the enemy forces can take your very soul and splinter it into the far reaches of the universe. Satan said it would be this way, that mankind would follow the drumbeat of his limited physical expression of illusion. But readers, you may lose on both counts, for God wins, and where will he find you? There are bases of extraterrestrial origin and station in, for instance, New Mexico. That is not to say that it is a base of God Creator or even his messengers. Your idiots have crossed, spliced, inbred, and altered living beings to the point of ability to distort the whole of human structure on your globe. God will not sanction with grace such alterations. I will allow, observe, and take note of your choices and actions, for I am not to interfere in your decisions and actions as are against your free will activities. You as a species will grow into strength and recognition of higher universal man, or you won't as a species. Those choices are yours. My orders are to stand by in preparation for all sorts of things as the play moves forward into destruction or into change unto godness. Which do you think is happening most rapidly? God indeed announced that there would be all manners of things coming against mankind, from plagues to wars. He did not say he would send them. The interpreters of the biblical rule book seem to have misconstrued a lot of things and a lot of information. He promised to send messengers with truth and offers life to his own. And he promised you this: he would win. How? Through his own creation. Of you, he holds the ability to uncreate, just as you can tear down your own sandcastles. Mostly, however, the only thing you need is the natural sea to wash upon the beach sandcastles. It reminds me of the man who wrote this week asking for information on alchemy of substance to make gold and how that works, and to give him a formula, and would dried dryas do the job? No to all the above. And as to the dryas, you have to have undried dryas to be of any value at all, for they represent the perfect cell, which is based in fluid. God keeps a lot of things out of your reach to protect you from yourself. How long do any of you think you would live if you could convert anything to gold? If you find a way to convert evil into goodness, oh yes, it is possible, then, and only then, in the final telling, you will have all the gold you could desire. We have a meeting this afternoon, so I must release Dorma. May I please have offered something herein upon which you might think very carefully? Good morning.
Thank you. We could launch off into a great diatribe regarding these things. I don't know what Rick might have available from Ron. I don't know if we have anything from Soltech to share, but I do think that it's time to have a little break, and it's time for you ones to take an active part in our meetings. I'm not talking necessarily about personal things. Some things will be personal. I will decline to answer. I used to always start with an explanation about dark glasses. They're not for show and tell. They're for eye protection. She has enough trouble with her eyes already. I will always receive any question offered in good intent. I will very frequently not be too gracious. I love the game when ones test me, try me, push me. I don't usually get quite as ripping mad as does Nikola Tesla, however, when these questions are structured just to see if there's any validity in the speaker so that stones can be thrown. I'm not about that. I really do have to say that I care whether or not you respect me. If you're around long enough, I know that you will grow to respect me. When you finally do address me instead of the voice box, then I know that we have made communion or contact, and all of the other things can be put aside and structured from there. On the other hand, if one's come to play and to make personal gain from something that we may offer, that's their problem, not ours. And I have been known to deliberately give those testers the wrong information. Just happens. A lot of people can pound calcium with steel balls for a long time. Maybe they will get gold. I doubt it, but maybe. So, I forget to tell you I will answer you if it's suitable. Not necessarily if I can. Some things I can't answer you because I have had no interest or involvement in them. They touch not my existence. I can go look up things, but then so can you. Why would you ask me about the War of 1812, which, by the way, was the appropriate war that you began to move as rapidly as you could back under the rule of England? But I don't need to tell you that. You can go to your history books and find the lie, and then you can go to the archives or to the authors who have written the truth. And you can mostly just go to a few authors anymore and find the truth. So I will answer what I can. I will decline to answer what I can but may not, for all sorts of reasons. The most of which is that I'm not in authority to answer them. And they're not suitable to talk publicly about in an open forum because they're usually personal and I don't even like to give names so that no one will ever be punished or jeopardized by anything that I might do of foolish nature. And with that in mind, let's just take a break, and then I want you to be conjuring your thoughts enough that we can have discourse rather than lecture. Thank you.
Getting organized here. I'll make a little report on Jean.
The shy, reclusive type.
We're on the record.
I know. So, he rather entertained everyone. He waited all the while, and Doris and EJ go in to visit. And he's not even into surgery yet. And so they assured the Eckers that he was probably sleeping because he was in the holding room. Well, he was in the holding room entertaining everyone right up to and through surgery. So when Overly went back in later in the night to make sure that surgery was okay, ran into one of the scrub nurses who said that he completely entertained everyone in surgery also. So, you know, he got tattled on. So then when they went the next day, they find him wandering the halls with all the pretty little nurses all around him like a hovering flock of angels, you know, tending him and getting him back to his room. And they were tattling on him, and they said that he was actually propositioning some lady down the hall. And it just happened to be one of the nuns. So while they were there, she came to check on his condition, and she was delightful. And DJ says to her, well, you should have taken him up on that, you know, temptation. And she said, well, yes, we do have to struggle along with a lot of temptation, but we have to overcome. Well, you see, Karen had already warned him that he was totally useless, as she is very quick to remind him all the time. You know, when the bed got empty next, he was hoping they'd move in a pretty young thing. And she reminded him that he was not going to be feeling too good, so maybe he had better reconsider. So he has done beautifully. And this is something else about having such pain. It's like, it truly is, in his instance, like being hit over the head with a hammer or in the back with a hammer. So that no matter what is required to stop it, it feels better. And he has been able to get through this entire procedure without, they had a Kevorkian set up for him, you know, where he could do his own morphine. And he never had to have even one jolt. So we're really pleased. He needs to be on his feet and not distracted. These things are terrible distractions. And Gene's load is only going to get heavier and heavier. And therefore, we always are hoping that our products and things now, and I believe that the reports on those are good, so that we're going to be able to squeak through. And maybe some that have great deficits for having given and shared, those differences can be made up. And it's so much better to have them made up from building a new product or building a school or building, rather than just pouring more into it. So we're pleased about Gene. He is a substantial and strong person for us. He had a long way to come, and he has done it with humor. And he's dependable. And that was not so when we began. He's had some hard blows during this period of time from ones he considered partners, people he thought he would help. It's part of life. And he's going to make it. Now go ahead, Overly. I wanted to give some credit here.
Time for Rick to read about Maholi. Maholi has sent, I believe, a Christmas message. So Rick will go from that.
Dear Rick, sorry for the brevity of this letter, but I wanted to get Chapter 19 of the Pipeline series to you before anything else happened to it. I think you catch my drift. Also enclosed is an update for the 1995 Christmas message and New Year. Thank you for printing my last update. I received many compliments from your readers. I must admire you for your courage to print the truth for people to read. There are many people out there who thirst for the real deal, and the contact tells it like it is. Keep up the good work. I will try to get a decent letter off to you in the near future. You are in my thoughts and prayers. In love and light, Michael Maholi. P.S. Please let me know if you receive these two letters, Pipeline Chapter 19 and Christmas Update. Also let me know if they seem tampered with. Got them, and they were not tampered with at all. A Christmas Update from Michael Maholi, 1995. With this being my second Christmas season in which the contact has been actively featuring my true life story of my connection with the power-hungry elite in the Banana Republic of Arkansas, and with the drug and weapon smugglers that proliferate the region, I would like to once again wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I would also like to thank each and every one of you who chose to stand by my side throughout the turmoil and troubles I am encountering in my journey. It is important to know and understand just what each and every one of us will face in the now future. I once told you that united we are stronger, wiser, and as the single drop of rain falls from the sky, it will form a stream which in turn will form a mighty river to flow across our great nation. Being under the tight supervision that is ongoing, I once again have encountered some minor problems here at the prison pertaining to my writings of the truth. It seems that there is a federal code that does not permit the distribution of any manuscript material by a federal inmate for the viewing by the general public. Thus the delay in my story, CIA Pipeline, being available for print. It took a while, but as the pieces of the puzzle came together, I found that in fact the prison officials were indeed intercepting my material all along, preventing my manuscript from reaching its ultimate destination. The citizens who search out the truth. I shall prevail, however, and continue to bring forth the entire story as well as current updates from time to time. As I related to you in the last update, things down in Arkansas and all the way to Washington are really starting to get warm for those who might have thought that they were out of the reach of the law. While the GOP-led Congress continues to turn a blind eye to the matters surrounding the whitewash affair, independent counsel Kenneth Starr is actively pursuing leads that continue to point the finger at so many of Clinton's circle of elite, many of whom were involved with myself, as well as with Barry Seal and Terry Reed. I will soon inform you of when Bill Clinton first became involved in the major drug smuggling operations, with strong ties to the Iran-Contra affair, the MENA and NELA airstrips, and the vast amounts of money being stashed away in secret foreign bank accounts. Up until recently, the clandestine operations that started over a decade ago in Arkansas had been virtually ignored by law enforcement agencies until I, along with but a handful of other brave souls, stepped forward to try to put an end to the madness. It is in Starr's attempt to trace cash contributions and to make sense of the complicated financial relationships linking the Clintons with the suspect businessmen, banks, and land schemes that the story begins to unfold. My last interrogation by the FBI late last summer, combined with the testimony of former Arkansas State Trooper L.D. Brown, has given credibility to the accusations that Bill Clinton himself had firsthand knowledge of the illegal Iran-Contra mission that spawned its beginnings on the rural airstrips of MENA and NELA, Arkansas. And now, with even more allegations coming from more Arkansas state troopers, the continued reluctance of the Justice Department to investigate my claims is going to be increasingly hard to ignore, especially as further allegations and disclosures of the Arkansas drug economy emerge. Last month, Whitewater investigators questioned me and Brown about our explosive claims that then-Governor Bill Clinton knew of all the illegal operations based at MENA and did nothing to stop it. Brown, as you may recall, served in Clinton's private security detail and also flew on two missions with the legendary drug smuggler Barry Seal. I know the truth of these missions since Mr. Seal was a cohort of mine very early in the game. Brown will also back my allegations that Clinton was fully aware of both a MENA-based CIA operation and that cocaine was being returned to the state on transport planes used to ship weapons to the Nicaraguan rebels. In flying the two missions with Barry Seal, Brown would find out, in much the same way I did, the involvement between the CIA, George Bush, Oliver North, and Bill Clinton. You begin the game in a relatively minor capacity, and as time goes on, you find yourself slipping farther into the abyss from which very few have escaped unscathed. During my lie detector test, which began as an investigation into the deaths of two young boys on the outskirts of Little Rock, I informed the FBI investigator out of Oklahoma that the state troopers involved in their deaths were also assigned to my case and other DEA cases throughout the 1980s. Being hooked up to their very own truth machine, I knew it would be a good time to come clean with some other information into my own case, and with my allegations that the state police shredded many key documents, and the fact that several bundles of money they confiscated in their search never made it into their evidence files, I knew I had hit upon a sore spot: unscrupulous law enforcement officials. Since my allegations, despite police insistence that no document shredding took place and that none of the DEA or other law officers kept any money found at my home, details are beginning to emerge of the extensive document destruction that went on at the state police headquarters where I was initially interrogated in Little Rock. But all of their handiwork has gone for naught. What the political scum in Arkansas must now worry about is that the most sensitive materials, both in photo and official documentation, are in my possession and hidden away in a safe location. And as soon as I am free to retrieve this material, Clinton's house of cards will surely crumble along with the rest of the players. Coming through another friend and associate, Terry Reed, is yet more hard evidence that the claims I profess are all indeed true. As I have told Rick Martin, I still have many loyal friends within the intelligence community, friends who continue to show that loyalty by securing data that would otherwise be virtually impossible to get my hands on. This is just one of the ways that I am able to gather FBI case files on certain individuals. I have also come into possession of several copies of depositions for Terry Reed's court records that tell a very interesting story of the Mina and Nella connection to the drug running and weapons trading. Reed's attorney, Robert Maloney, and Special Investigator Joe Dunlap are now in constant communication with me, informing me on various details that will prove not only Reed's involvement, but mine as well. Now, in accordance with the documents in state police control, in steps one, Michelle Tudor. Michelle worked as a secretary for over 2 years in the Arkansas State Police Organized Crime Unit. She is about to tell under oath how she was instructed by her then boss, Lieutenant John Morrow, to destroy an enormous number of intelligence files in a 2-day binge of shredding. According to Tudor, whose husband Jim Tudor, another old acquaintance who hunted and fished with me regularly up in the pristine mountains of northern Arkansas, is also an Arkansas state trooper, the amount of documents that she was ordered to shred was massive. So massive was the shredded evidence that once she was done, the material then had to be put into large garbage bags that the state prisoners used when raking the leaves while assigned to work around headquarters. She will also state that never before that time, or at any time since, has she been asked to shred such an enormous amount of intelligence information. Tudor also recalls that during her 2 years at the state police headquarters, any complaints from the citizenry that came in pertaining to the MENA operations were destroyed immediately. And this happened on a regular basis. It can now be verified by Terry Reed's attorney, Robert Maloney, that the documents that Tudor had shredded did, in fact, contain sensitive information relating to MENA and drug and weapons smuggling. One document in particular that Tudor will testify to contained data signed by Oliver North and had my photo and name throughout the file. It was this past May, while I was in the hole at Leavenworth USP for allegations into my attempted escape and subversive actions against the federal government, which were dropped, that Arkansas State Police Commander Tommy Goodwin was questioned about the alleged shredding that took place concerning my case files and the files containing sensitive information on MENA. Goodwin's reply was that, to his knowledge, he was totally unaware of any documents that may have been shredded. The key phrase is this sentence is, to his knowledge. Goodwin, you must understand, is just a puppet, like the rest of the law enforcement officials in the land of opportunity. And the masters of evil can and do pull the strings of these officials at any time they want something or someone buried. It has also come to my attention that former state trooper Brown has been subpoenaed by Reed's attorney, Robert Maloney, and that I'm also to be included in the courtroom drama that will soon unfold. Brown is expected to testify that Goodwin personally informed him that he ordered the purging of MENA intelligence documents after a Freedom of Information Act request was made for the files. When this request was made, Goodwin immediately contacted his superiors to find out how much of the information should be sent out to headquarters in Oklahoma City and which parts should be destroyed entirely. Now, the regional offices for the DEA, the FBI, and of course the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation are located, or should I say, were located, in the federal building in downtown Oklahoma City. And we all know what happened to the federal building there. What this all means is that vital documents, photos, and other intelligence data from the MENA investigation were all destroyed in the April 19th bombing. Trooper Brown also disclosed with extreme detail in a 190-page deposition that Clinton knew very well just what was going on in rural MENA and Nella. He spoke of a man from the mountains with an isolated dirt runway landing strip behind his home. It was there that Bill Clinton, Dan Lassiter, Don Tyson, and members of the Ward family out of Little Rock would fly to hunt and fish and distribute large sums of money to various law enforcement officials who had helped in the distribution of narcotics. Now, who was this man that Brown spoke of in his deposition? That's correct. Yours truly. In October 1984, Barry Seal would phone Brown from my home in the mountains to inform Brown that he was aware of Brown's application for employment with the CIA that was on file at Langley. This was with Clinton's complete knowledge and full support. Seal would arrange a meeting with Brown at a well-known downtown restaurant in Little Rock called Cajun's Wharf. At this time, Seal explained to him about the airstrips and his role in smuggling for the CIA. It was during this meeting that I was under the impression that Seal knew Clinton very well, and this fact was later confirmed by Mr. Brown as well. Soon after, Brown would be making the first of his two trips to Nicaragua along with Seal and myself. The first trip would take place late in the summer of 1984, and the next trip would follow several weeks later. During the second trip, we would cross paths with the boys from Miami, Max Merpelstein and Rafa Salazar. Seal had to remind Brown not to carry any type of ID that could possibly identify him in the event of capture. We would leave from Mena and fly to New Orleans to refuel and pick up other crates of weapons to be delivered down in Central America. This delivery would consist of an airdrop over the jungle at precise coordinates. The crates contained M16 rifles, ammunition, and other military supplies. On our return trip, our plane, a C-130 twin-engine military cargo craft, would stop off at Tegucigalpa, capital of Honduras, to pick up duffel
bags.
That's
really close, Rick.
Capital of Honduras, anyway. Okay. To pick up duffel bags of cocaine and high-grade marijuana. Back at Mena, I witnessed the $25,000 payment to Brown from Seal for his first trip, in which he did little more than keep us amused with his stories of Governor Clinton's sexual desires and money-making scams, and Hillary's sexual cravings and lesbian desires. Brown definitely had the inside scoop on these stories. It was also brought to my attention that Brown's recent testimony under oath would confirm that Clinton had acknowledged privately to him that the cocaine we returned was part of a deal between his friend Dan Lassiter and his half-brother Roger Clinton. Oh, and least I forget, some of the stash would go to several close girlfriends of Hillary's up in Chicago. Barry and I would have to personally deliver the exotics to Hillary's friends and other associates. We would fly into Chicago's Lakefront Airport at Miggs Field and take a limo from there to an unknown destination for the drop. That's another story. You people will have a front row seat in the courtroom drama as it unfolds and a new dimension of the Mena chapter is unveiled. You will hear many allegations in this story of greed, lust, and corruption. I will do my best to keep you all informed as the real story unwinds. I must apologize for my tardiness in answering some of your letters, but due to the tremendous amount of legal data that I'm being asked to provide, it takes up much of my free time. But please continue to write as it gives me the courage and the conviction to carry on. As many of you know, we have been having some difficulties at federal prisons around the country, and the security has been on alert for some time. Because of this, I ask that you all please continue to support Contact, as they are the only outlet that presents the truth to the people of this nation, Canada, and several others as well. I will continue to answer as many letters from you as my postal funds allow. Please excuse any brief delay you may encounter. In closing, I would like to thank you all from the bottom of my heart for all the love and support you have given me over the past year. May God bless you one and all. One final note. Remember Mama Bear, I told you so. Keeper of the Flame, Michael Maholi.
I'm so pleased that he's sharing again. You see, when the beast comes in and starts giving you a bad time, interrupting letter flows, unless you are totally... you don't have any words that really fit my need here. So let me explain what I'm trying to say. Unless your connection and your trust is so strong to ride out the hard times, you will frequently split or cut away the moment that you can't find resolution to the confusing input. Now, Jeff is the example that can best be used today. Caught in the middle. A lot of stories which make sense on both sides, but with very human input from both sides, from lack of knowledge, covering whatever may be presented at any given moment of time, and not being